Anything combat with Johnny K.
It's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants. I'm Johnny K. This is the Anything Combat show. We've spoken to him a million times. This will be the fourth time he's on the show. My friend Austin Ford. We've spoken off the camera more than we've spoken fucking on air. So, Austin, we spoke the other day, but how have you been and what are you up to?
Life is good. It's good. Just, you know, raising my babies and, you know, making videos, evolving as a coach, you know, same old stuff, everyday learner.
Where are you joining us from?
Kansas City. I'm currently at the Spirit Combat Sports headquarters, and basically Spirit Combat Sports makes the products for the UFC. So all the gear that you see on the Ultimate Fighter, the gloves you see in the cage, that all comes from this company. So
what do you think about the new gloves?
You know, personally, I haven't fought in them. In fact, I have a pair of the old gloves right here. And, you know, I love them. These are the same gloves as the Strikeforce had. And I don't know if you know House. He's a cut man for the UFC. He created these gloves long ago. And they're classic. They're excellent. But they decided to make a new glove. And what they did was they used a company, a football helmet company, Visus or Visus. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. But they have a helmet that reduces concussions. So it's an American football helmet. So that company basically created the, and I have a diagram right here, but they created this new glove, all this technology. So, you know, I don't know how techy it is with the layered foam, but there are some cool features about the new glove. I've heard mixed reviews, to say the least. So only time will tell, but, I mean, they're nice. There are no seams on the gloves. New Velcro system, you know, but it's a glove. I don't think they've seen an increase or reduction in knockout or cuts. You know, it's still the same, excellent combat sport. So, you know, and a lot of fighters, they wanted the Trevor Whitman glove.
The Onyx.
Right. And I promise you, that's amazing. You know, Trevor's, not only is he an amazing coach, he's an amazing creator of equipment. He even is a seamstress, you know, a leather worker, a blacksmith, you know, he can do it all. So, but they wanted to keep the fingers, you know, out of the eyes and, you know, I'm not sure about it. You know, I don't punch people with those gloves. So I can only speculate, but when I put the new glove on, I'm like, ooh, yeah, it's nice. But same thing when I put that glove on. But you know, but I've heard a mixed bag. Some people hate the new gloves.
Have you tried on the Onyx gloves?
No. No, but I promise you, you put that glove on, they're nice. You know, I have some custom gear that Trevor made for me, and it's of the highest quality. So, but no, I haven't tried it on. I do know that they tried to get it done, but, you know, there were some obstacles that they just couldn't get past. So.
Austin, what did you think about the UFC Noche card? We spoke about it before the other night about Sean and Marab. That was an interesting fight. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I wanted Sugar Sean to win, but I knew, you know, I knew what was going to happen. And I honestly thought that Sterling was going to get it done in the previous fight in this same manner. But, you know, I had to go with my head on this one, and so I picked Merab to win by decision. So I won the giant bet that I made on that.
What were your legs on the bet?
$0. I'm kidding. I'm never gonna gamble. You know, I'm not a good gambler. But love the fight. Classic grappler versus striker. You know, I just, you know, we talked about it. You've got to be good everywhere, or really good somewhere. And we know that wrestling is king. You know, I love watching the striking, you know, I'm a striking coach, but wrestling is the most important aspect of fighting in my opinion.
Listen to this, dude. So now, because of that fight, you've got all the champions being grapplers now, basically. Pantoja, jiu-jitsu guy, Merab, bantamweight is the wrestler, featherweight. You've got Ilya Topuria. He's a jiu-jitsu and a wrestler. Then he became a boxer. Half and half. Lightweight, Makachev's Makachev's mainly known for his grappling. Bilal, grappler. Middleweight is Drickus. He's kind of half and half. Light heavyweight is Alex Pereira. And then heavyweight, you got Jones. So most of the champs now have a really heavy emphasis on the grappling, and the only champ that doesn't is Alex Pereira. He's the outlier. He's the only champ that has the majority of his stats in striking. And to be honest, I want to talk about Alex. So you came on the show ages ago. I think it was like a year ago, and we were discussing the prospects of Alex and how he would do against the next guys. And I said as an early prediction back then that he would beat Magomed and that he would beat Rakic and all these other guys, right? Now, he's going up against Khalil Rountree Jr., and we'll break that down. But I think right now, Pereira kind of, I don't know how to say it. Like, he's improved his grappling. There's videos of him doing jits. There's videos of him doing judo. I just feel like this guy's ever improving. And he's very dangerous, and I'm going to pick him in a lot of the fights that are upcoming as well.
You know, I'd have to agree. I mean, you can tell that he's the type of fighter that's, he has the makeup to improve in every aspect. He's got the touch of sleep. He's a big, solid dude. Got the range. He has the mindset, and you don't need to know him to know that this is a serious dude. And he has the adversity in his, you know, background that he's overcome. So it's just the perfect recipe for someone that could be a champion as long as he wants to, or as long as his age allows. You know, so I'm a big Pereira fan. But everyone tends to forget, you know, we talk about him like he's invincible, and he is. He's not invincible. No one is. You know, no one is immune to getting touched in that right spot, whether it be on the jaw or where we saw him, he got hit in the head. And, you know, it's sad to see that Adesanya is way out of the picture now, it seems like. But the last time they fought, I mean, we saw what happened.
Let me know what you think about this. So Pereira's going to fight Khalil, right? Then he's going to go down to middleweight. That's what he's saying. And he's going to have one last shot at beating Drickus before leaving, right? And going back to light heavyweight, probably fight Magomed. He's never going to go back to middleweight. Now, I think this is a fucking story in itself, and I'll tell you why. Because Dricus is a guy who's beaten Adesanya, right? Now, Pereira, he's beaten Jan Blachowicz, who beat Adesanya, Sean Strickland, who beat Adesanya, and the only person that he hasn't beaten to one-up Adesanya is Dricus. Adesanya is a two-time middleweight champion. Pereira would become the second two-time middleweight champion, basically invalidating, you know, Israel's achievement. He doesn't own that anymore. Then that perfectly sets up a trilogy with Adesanya, if they want to do it, at light heavyweight at a higher weight class, because there's just history. Even though Izzy doesn't have the belt or no claim to even fight a light heavyweight, he still knocked Pereira out, and he's the only guy to beat Pereira. So, apart from Pereira's debut against that Mexican guy, who's also making his debut, that Mexican guy who beat Pereira, he's making his debut on Dana White Contender Series. So you got to look out for that guy too, because he's getting better. So, if Pereira does that, that means he will, like, that's an achievement in itself. Beating every single person that Adesanya lost to, as well as being the second ever middleweight champion. Like, I just think him against Dricus, I feel like Dricus, even though he's a big bully, big tall bloke, and he looked huge against Adesanya, I think all these guys look very short and very small compared to Pereira. Pereira's a giant. If there's ever a guy that looks like a giant in that weight class, I've never seen somebody that's 6'4", 6'5", that made middleweight. You know what I mean? We saw at welterweight, we saw Nursultan Ruziboyev from Uzbekistan, and he was 6'5". He just fought Joaquin Buckley. But I mean, if you look at just the muscle bellies, we're talking a 6'5 that might be a little bit lean and skinny versus a 6'5 in Pereira who can make heavyweight. I just think that this is the pathway for Pereira, and I'll tell you what it is. I think he goes and fights Khalil, defends, KOs. I think he goes down to middleweight, takes his time, drops down, beats Dricus, probably knocks him out, right? Then he'll go back up, he'll fight Magomed, take a long time off, because he needs a long time to bulk up. Then he can do what he needs to do with Israel, if they do that. And then the final move for him before he ends his career has to be heavyweight, either against whoever's the heavyweight champ at that point, or if Jones vacates, I think that should be Jones's retirement match. I think that's the career trajectory for Pereira. I think that's the way you do it.
That'd be a legendary, storied ending, you know, to his career. I wonder about him going down to 185. I'm not sure if he wants to make that weight again, or even if he can't, because the longer that he stays out of that weight class, the more difficult it will be to get back to middleweight. If he does fight DDP, I see him, you know, DDP rushing across the cage and then, you know, getting caught with a hook coming in and getting flatlined. I also see Du Plessis getting into the clinch, maybe pushing Pereira against the cage. And then we'll get to see that clinch game from Pereira, you know, the elbows and the knees. So I would pick Pereira over Du Plessis as well. Now, as far as heavyweight for Pereira, I think that's where we would see a disadvantage for him, because he's not a big heavyweight. You know, we see John Jones, you know, even him at closer to the heavyweight limit. You know, I think, what did he walk in there, like 250 something for his last fight? And he kind of looked fat, you know.
I think he looked fat.
Yeah. I mean, in the belly as well, you know, so.
I think he was slow.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely doesn't look like a natural heavyweight. Now, if you look at, I'm drawing a blank on the interim champion right now.
Tom Aspinall?
Yeah, Tom Aspinall. He's a big guy. I don't think he could ever make 205.
He's fucking that guy.
Yeah, Yeah. So we've got...
He just playing like an NFL, bro.
Yeah. a true heavyweight against, you know, a 6'4", I guess, Miocic. You know, is he 248? They have him listed as. That's not a big heavyweight. You know, John Jones going up. You know, he's not a huge heavyweight. And so I think Aspinall would be a problem for Pereira. And I think Aspinall will beat either John Jones or Stipe Miocic, you know. So if I had to pick, I'm going John Jones over Miocic, Aspinall over Jones, and I don't think we'll see Pereira out of the light heavyweight division again. That's just my opinion. I think he'll just stay right there. He's got a home there. He's a champion there. I don't see him going back down to 85 to settle any type of score with Adesanya. I don't think he's motivated by revenge or even thinking past his next fight. You know, I just think that if the UFC calls and says, hey, this is what we want you to do, that's what he's going to do. Up, down, stay. He'll do it. But I don't think he has these elaborate plans. And your elaborate plan is that's deep, man. That's extensive. I'm impressed with your projection of what Pereira's going to do.
He tweeted it. The only reason that I say it is that he tweeted the middleweight move. He said he would just go down to middleweight and then that's it. The one final fight at middleweight and then back up. Now, I mean, the weight, as you said, that's a serious issue. That is. But I think that you need the right opponent for that move. And I think that Dricus, out of all the champions, the way he's wild, I think Alex Pereira is the perfect fighter. His vision, his perception, the way he looks at the strikes, I feel like he can catch someone. If you try and be wild with him, it won't work. I think the only way to beat him is to really hit him. And Sean Strickland proved that. Because if you rewatch that first round with Sean Strickland, Sean is actually outboxing him. And he's landing on Pereira and he's landing punches. He's going forward. You need to walk him down and you need to box him. Now, in doing that, you're going to get countered eventually. And you can't do that up against Pereira. So it's this weird chess match. And it's either push forward and get countered and try and risk that, or just stay on the back foot and eventually he will offensively destroy you. So it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to sit there or do you want to go forward? Adesanya goes forward, KOs him. Sean Strickland goes forward, punches him. Yuri Prokasha darts forward in the first fight, not the second, the first fight, and was catching him. I think that's the way you beat him. And that's why I think Magomed can't beat Pereira. I think that his takedowns, the way he's trying to take down Jan Blachowicz, you know what I mean? He's trying to take down Jan Blachowicz, fucking 41. You know, Jan's a good fighter. He's a very good fighter, right? He can even strike with Pereira. That's how good he is. And he strike with Pereira better than all the other guys, too. So, Magomed up against Pereira, I don't see it happening. Magomed will shoot a couple takedowns. He might get him down a couple times. But I feel like if they're up on the feet, I think that's the perfect target for Pereira to get another knockout. And we've seen it time and time again. I'm just going off what is more probable. You know, we're looking at Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker, as we know, is no good anymore. Ozdemir destroyed him. Right? I'm sorry to say, but Ozdemir destroys him. You've got him having a no contest with Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker's doing wild stuff on Magomed. He's defending takedowns. It's like if fucking Johnny Walker can defend takedowns on you, and you're fighting old man Jan Blachowicz, and Pereira in this time, all he's been doing since that fight is drilling. He's in an issue. You're up against an active fighter versus an inactive fighter, and the active fighter, when you're active and you're a striker, when you're a wrestler and you're inactive as a fighter, you can shoot takedowns on your opponents and your training partners outside of camp. So you're staying active. By being inactive, you're still shooting takedowns. But in striking, in an actual fight, you can't go 100%. You know this, coach, right? You can't go 100% in training. And if you do, you're going to get kicked out of the gym. That's stupid, right? So you need to go 100% in the actual fight. You're trying to knock your opponent out. So all Alex has been doing is staying active and just knocking all these people out. And from awkward angles too. Fadeaway hooks, counters. You know what I mean? He knocked out Jamal with hand fighting and then he goes for it. He knocked out Yuri with the step off, also with the switch kick. I mean, there's a lot of different fucking things that he's been doing. You know what I mean? And I just feel like if Magomed thinks that he's a fucking striker and tries to strike with him, it's not going to work. The only part of the victory is to wrestle fuck him. And Pereira's getting really good with the takedown defense. And that's another reason why I think he should go down to fight DDP, because that will give him enough experience, because DDP will shoot takedowns. And if you fight Khalil, who won't shoot any, you go and fight DDP, who will, that will build your skills. So when he goes to fight Magomed, he's totally prepared for him. I think he needs that one little entry-level kind of shorter guy, because Magomed's 6'2", DDP's 6'1". You know what I mean? If he has an entry-level into that grappling, that's good. You know what I mean? DDP was able to take down Whittaker and Adesanya. So I think that he should do that, because it preps him perfectly for the next fights to do. You know what I mean?
So, let me ask you this. You clearly are looking past Khalil Roundtree.
Yes.
What do you think about Chael Sonnen's take? That Khalil Roundtree is going to knock Pereira out.
Chael Sonnen, and I'll say this on the show right now, Chael Sonnen has not been right on a singular pick in the last 4 years. Chael Sonnen is washed. I'm sorry to say. He's got his show. He's a very funny guy. I believe that what he's doing is he's picking the opposite person at all times to get clicks, first of all, and to second of all, stay relevant. The more people get angry at Chael, the more that he, you know, he's winning. So I feel like if you watch every single fight that takes place, like, he'll pick the wrong person. And he never has concise argumentation for who's going to win. If you ask me why they're going to win, I've looked at every single one of their fights and I can tell you what works and what doesn't work from what stance and what part of the cage. Like I told you with Makhachev about wrestling up against the cage, right? Wherever Chael picks, he picks just bullshit. But we love him because he's funny. So Khalil. Khalil's got that good Muay Thai and shit. Now, Pereira's dealt with that, bro. Pereira's dealt with Muay Thai practitioners. You're talking about a guy who's double champion in glory. He's a kickboxer first by trade. If you can't shoot takedowns on him, you need to do some other type of striking with Pereira. Similar to Strickland. You need to go forward and box. Khalil's a kicker. He punches into kicks, kicks into punching. He's got a great Thai game. That bouncy footwork, bro. Pereira is so big and he's so quick and his foot positioning. That bouncy footwork shit's probably not going to work against Pereira. Pereira will catch him on the feet, either countering him on the punches or just going forward, and he'll just sit him down.
So we obviously know that fight will not hit the ground. Neither fighter will attempt to take it to the ground. So we're going to get to see basically only strike. Does Khalil have a puncher's chance to knock?
Khalil's a strong guy, man. He's a strong guy. And I think Khalil's greatest attribute is that even though he's so strong and built, he favors his precision over his power. And whenever he favors his precision, he gets him right on the chin. And it takes 4 pounds of force on someone's chin to sit him down. So, you know what I mean? Khalil, I need to do some more viewing on Khalil's game, because I saw his fight with Dustin Jacoby, And a lot of people said that he lost by split decision against Jacoby, a very good striker.
Keep in mind,
maybe you don't know this. I'll tell you this right now. Pereira's already knocked out Jacoby in Glory Kickboxing.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Jacoby's his game. You know, he's going to kick low, kick the calf, stance switcher. You know, he's talented. So Khalil beating him, I think that's a good test. And now you say Pereira beat Jacoby. I could see Pereira being a little bit accepting of Roundtree and playing into the only place that Roundtree can win, but playing into that and being, you know, I think he's going to get hit. I don't think since Roundtree being a southpaw, I don't see him really damaging the leg like he can in the orthodox fighter. But then again, you know, Pereira can switch kick the calf against the southpaw as well. But I think that could be a factor to where he can't just beat up that lead leg like he normally does in a close stance. So I think Roundtree has a chance, but I'm with you that I would never pick. And neither will any of the bettors and the odds will be clearly in Pereira's favor. But I'm glad you said that, though.
With Khalil, the only thing that I think he should favor is getting really close to him and trying to Muay Thai clinch him. Because when you looked at the single collar positions that he did with Israel, Israel was having decent amount of success on almost landing. He would throw a straight and then a lead hook behind it when he's in the single collar. It's like, Israel's a kickboxer. Israel's not a Muay Thai guy. So I think that seeing Khalil favors his clinch and he does so well in the clinch, I think maybe he should try that. But Pereira is very tall, so that's also a difficult thing. You know what I mean? There's so much going on here, but I do think Khalil should maybe try and clinch with him. What do you think?
I would love to see just boxing in the 4 ounce gloves. That's what I want to see. That's where I think Khalil has the best chance. And I think that's what we will see. We're going to see not just a stand-up fight, but a heavy hands fight. So as I think of Khalil, he's going to appear wild. You know, he'll throw lots of looping punches, but he'll also straight left down the pipe aggressive. So Pereira's been knocked out. He can be knocked out again. I think it could happen. But if Roundtree gets into the clinch, I think he will pay dearly with elbows and knees. And then we might even see a poor single leg or even just where we see Khalil's head right around the waist area. And then we'll see Pereira dropping those elbows. That was so devastating when he did that. But everything Pereira does hurts, you can tell. So
yeah, and he doesn't favor his power. He favors technique only. And it's just ridiculous because he's so powerful. Someone like that is so powerful, yet he favors the knee, the hard part of the elbow. Moving the jaw slightly. He's not trying to smash you and take your whole head off. He's getting you right on the edge of all of his punches. Beautiful.
And what I also like is that he will stand very close to the fire. You know, he's not big head movement to miss. He's looking to barely make you miss. And he's closer than you think he is, you know? So I'm very stoic, ready to crash bone on bone. So, you know, I love that about Pereira too. And very basic as well. If conventional coaches would look at Pereira and be like, you know, get your hands up, you know, and his hands aren't down. They're in some mid area. And he's not taking his hands from from here and then puffing to throw them wherever his hands are, that's where he throws them from. And that's a unique technique, in my opinion. You don't have to have your hands up. You know, he'll throw them from the waist. He'll throw them from his chest. He'll, you know, and he is defensively sound. He's just not a cover-up guy. So I'm hoping that we get to see a next striking battle, and I don't see it going past the second round. What say you on a prediction of a finish? When and how?
It's Pereira by punches, KO or TKO with, I want to say round one. I really do want to say round one, even though, you know, I just find it very hard to believe that if the fight slows down, then we'll get to a round two. But if Pereira wants him out of there, then he'll treat him like all the other guys. You know what I mean? Yuri did very well to be wild and to be very tough. You know what I mean? I don't think Khalil is as tough as those fighters. He's a pretty tough guy, but we even saw with Khalil, he's been knocked out before, by Johnny Walker as well. You know what I mean? I think, okay, round one, round two, KO Pereira. A fighter I want to talk to you about, though, is in the division. I think there's two fighters we need to look out for at light heavyweight for title aspirations. First one, Carlos Ahlberg from City Kickboxing. Yes. And second one, Azamat Mirzakhanov, 14-0. Do you know about the Russian?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. You're speaking of, he's redhead.
No, that's Shahrabulat Magomedov at middleweight. So Azamat Mirzakhanov is called the professional, right? And I've got it up here. He's already beaten Dustin Jacoby. And then in 2023, it got cancelled. He was going to fight Khalil Roundtree Jr., right? In 2023. Got cancelled. Then he got put up against Menifield. And Menifield, he knocked out Alonzo as well. I think Azamat Mirzakhanov is a guy that you need to pay attention to. And I also think Carlos Ahlberg, we saw what he's been doing, and we've seen how Izzy, the stuff that Izzy has said about him. I think Carlos is great.
I'm a huge fan of Carlos Ahlberg. And again, he reminds me of a bigger, more sturdy, rely on power version of Adesanya. You know, a lot of those guys out of that City Kickboxing, and I'll just tell you right now, City Kickboxing is, that's my spirit gym. You know, I feel like if I was in that, in one of those classes as an observer, I'd go, yes, yes, yes. I feel like we're aligned. So I know you don't like Adesanya's style. It's not aesthetically pleasing to you.
But I like the other guys. I like Ahlberg. I like Dan Hooker. And I like the other guy that you made the video about the other day that we're talking about. What's his name?
Navajo Sterling.
Bro, those types of guys coming out of the gym. They've also got someone that came on the show, Aaron tore him up too, right? Who's Dan Hooker's friend. Dude, there's a lot of guys there, man. There's a lot of guys there that are really good. I think that the next generation, you know, they've had to figure out what they're doing with Adesanya, with Dan, with those guys. I think the next generation coming up, you've got some serious contenders in all of those divisions.
It's a problem because Ahlberg, I'm glad he's further along in his career than Sterling, but them being in the same weight class, they may have.
That's what I was thinking.
They may have an issue, but until it does, they probably are excellent training partners for each other. I mean, you could imagine, you know, and I'd like to see Adesanya improve. You know, I don't think he has anything to improve, but I think he could still improve and lean on training with an Ulberg and a Sterling and those big guys. City Kickboxing, gosh, they're just producing some unique striking. They do things in a cutting edge way. You know, they're not stuck behind the classics. They are basic. They are basic, but they teach and perform at an elite level of basic strikes. And I'm very impressed with all of them. You look at Kai Kara France, you know, even the flyweights are looking to finish the fight. All those guys are looking to finish the fight. They all seem to have a chip on their shoulder in a way that it's a confidence. You know, when you come out of City Kickboxing, there's this confidence that they have. And, you know, that's why their coach has been coach of the year. You know, people are migrating there and they're on your side of the world, which is, you know, spreading mixed martial arts the highest level across the world. So big City Kickboxing fair for sure.
Let's talk about McGregor. So, bro, can you believe Chandler and McGregor has been canceled? Can you believe that?
I never thought that fight was going to happen. I never thought it was going to happen. Even when they got so close, I wasn't sure they were going to fight. And then when the press conference is canceled, I was not surprised at all. So I don't think we'll ever see McGregor fight again. And Chandler's already booked. So I'm glad to see Chandler move on, because, you know, Father Time, we know, is undefeated, and you can't sit on the shelf waiting for the chance to fight McGregor. I mean, McGregor, I think he's lost his last five fights.
McGregor, you know what? Fucking hell, man. I think his last win, seriously, was Cerrone in 2020 or 2021. And then he came back for Dustin Poirier twice. And then lost both of those. And I think he's been out for that time. Are you getting it up right now?
Yeah, I want to take it.
Dude, Chandler, he's fighting Charles Oliveira, one of my favorites, for the second time. And the reason that they've tossed Chandler a bone here, I believe, is that they've made it, I believe they've made it a number one contenders fight. And I'll tell you why I think they've done this, right? Because they've made it five rounds. I think that the reason they made it five rounds is to show that, you know, Chandler and Charles Oliveira are championship level fighters, and they fight all the people that fought for the belt, and they also fought for the belt together, Chandler and Charles. Chandler's gone on to fight Justin, Dustin. Charles has defended the belt against Dustin and Justin, and also fought Chandler again, right? Now second time. So if they've made this a five round fight, I think whoever wins this actually fights for the belt. And I think that even though Chandler's looking for this redemption, he can't get through Charles. He can't get through that style. Because if he engages, yeah. I think that if Chandler fights with Charles, I think on the feet, Charles beats him like he did last time. And I think on the ground, we saw that the more Chandler forces the wrestling and forces the submission offense, the more Charles gets to work with that. And eventually, he gets the better of the person that he's fighting. Unless they're literally a Dagestani fighter from the Caucasus region in the mountains. You know what I mean? Apart from that, you're not really beating Charles Oliveira in the grappling exchanges.
So what do you think about this? I've noticed that Charles Oliveira, if he loses, if he's losing for more than 30 seconds, he has difficulty turning that around. So if Chandler has a moment beyond a single punch or a takedown, I think Chandler will win. I think Oliveira has to win the whole fight to win. As soon as he gets behind, I don't know if it's him giving up on himself or I don't know what it could be, but I see him having an issue bouncing back from adversity. So you don't see Chandler winning at all in any fashion, or because you know Chandler's going to bring the pace. At first, it will be competitive, but if Oliveira, as soon as a little bit of doubt creeps into his mind, he seems to kind of throw it into a lower gear and kind of get overwhelmed. So I'm looking forward to that fight. I don't see it as a gift to Chandler. But who else is Chandler going to fight? It has to be a big money fight every single time. I mean, he's a star. So, you know, I think Chandler was going to run through Conor McGregor for sure.
I think McGregor was going to beat Chandler, and I think that Oliveira also too beats Chandler. You're right with some of what you said, because Oliveira, he's actually never been past a third round in his whole career. I believe that's the stat.
Wow.
Yeah. I know that's just ridiculous seeing that he's been so many 25-minute fights. Now, Chandler, he can go for 25 minutes. He's well-conditioned, and he puts a really difficult pace and volume on people, such as him decimating Dustin Poirier before Dustin got the submission in the third round. With Oliveira, he fought Armin Saryukian, and he won that first round, and then Armin came into the fight the second and third. However, if you look at the fight, right, Oliveira was the better striker in that fight and didn't engage in the striking enough. And also, with the submissions, he was catching Armin in you know, anaconda chokes, in guillotines. He was catching him in these submissions, but he wasn't able to go for it. Now, the fourth and fifth round were coming up in that fight. Now, it was only a three-rounder, right? So the fight ends. But I think seeing that Oliveira looked really fresh in that fight, he was good to go for the fourth and fifth. He hadn't used all of his energy. And I think that this is where Oliveira is going to do well against Chandler, because Chandler, he just goes ridiculous. He's a ridiculously paced fighter. Now, he can do 25. I just think that when it comes to pure striking, you know what I mean? Oliveira, he's like 34, 35 right now. Chandler, he's 38 or something, right? Chandler's getting...
38?
Yeah, he's getting older. He's like 37 or 38. Check that. He's getting older. I just think that from a striking point of view, Oliveira is much better. And I think that it's going to look similar to the first fight. I don't think there's going to be a lot of difference. I don't think that they've both changed as fighters and both leveled up a lot. However, they're both leveled up in what they're good at. And when you put those together, Oliveira kind of comes on top. So I think that Oliveira beats Chandler by knockout or submission. And I think that McGregor would have knocked out Chandler, even though he was underprepared for that fight.
So let's compare. Just to touch on it just for a moment, do you think Conor McGregor was training hard like he needs to win against a guy like Michael Chandler that you know he cuts no corners in the gym in his preparation for the fight. So you can count on him being in great shape. What did you call it? He's going to rock up every single day. So you're telling me that McGregor, this version of McGregor, who was going to fight this version of Chandler, McGregor was gonna knock out Michael Chandler.
The shit version of McGregor knocks out Chandler. No, I'm being dead serious because Chandler, he's so fucking wild. He's so wild. I feel like the reason McGregor wanted that fight is Chandler's short, right? Chandler's short. And McGregor's 5'8", 5'9". Chandler's like, I think around the same height or something, but a little bit shorter. Now, Chandler throws these big fuck-off hooks. And Connor is very good at anticipation and countering. And because of that, I just thought that McGregor was going to frame him off and just finish him with the left or bully him in the striking in the first round. If you watch the Dustin Poirier-Connor second fight, before Connor starts, you know, his foot starts fucking up and all the rest, he is hitting Dustin with some really fucking good shots, right? And I think that version of McGregor, the one that is focusing on the anticipation of where the strikes are going and then clipping him with counters, I think that's the one. That's what's good for McGregor's style. However, McGregor's old now. He's getting older. The generation of fighters that he can fight, he's already fought Max. Max Holloway is a little bit younger than him. He's got Dustin there. He's got Chandler. He's got Oliveira. He's got Gaethje. Dude, if these guys all end up in the future kind of retiring from the sport, same with Masvidal, all of these guys and Nate, all of these guys can fight Connor eventually at one point. I don't see Connor. See, I was thinking Connor was definitely going to come back, and now that this has been cancelled, this was the straw that broke the camel's back for why it's like he might not be. Connor, he was able to fight all these guys because they're all in the same age bracket as him. So if he comes back, then he's there. But he's off doing other shit right now. He's drinking beers, fucking doing lines and stuff. He's got other more important things to get to, like cocaine. So I think that now that he's got the BKFC and stuff, it doesn't look like he's gonna come back unless it's a washed up Nate Diaz.
So we never got to talk about Max Holloway versus Gaethje. So obviously
I picked Max to knock out Gaethje. I put that on my bet and I got that shit.
What?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. When, and I picked it in the third round and he got him in the fifth, so I got that wrong.
You know, I as soon as the knockout happened, I turned the TV off. You know, because I'm not close friends by any means with Michael Chandler, or Justin Gaethje, but it was like watching a buddy when he fell so hard. It was so
yeah, fuck yeah.
Now, my question to you is, Max Holloway versus Ilya, how do you see that fight going down?
Gaethje throws really wild punches. Ilya doesn't. Ilya is a shorter guy who's very, very boxing. Like, his fundamental boxing systems is so tight, it's very hard to crack that code. You need to kick that guy. If Max stays on the outside, runs around, and does what he did to Arnold Allen, when Arnold was on, I believe, a 10-fight win streak, and he was kicking at him and side kicks and doing all the stuff and mixing the game around. He can't shoot on Ilya. That's the problem. He can't shoot on him, similar to how Max shot takedowns on Yair Rodriguez, right? He can't fucking shoot on Ilya. Ilya's too good for that. The only way to beat Ilya is to mix up the kicking and the punching. If he goes in for a slugfest, punching how he did with Ricardo Lamas, punching how he did with Justin Gaethje, Ilia Topuria is going to have a field day, especially with the fact that Max's arms are so long and Ilya's arms are so little that he can come up with the uppercuts and stuff. He will land an uppercut three faster than Max will land his hook, right? Because they'll be so tight there. I think Max needs Muay Thai clinch. He needs a lot of kicking and he needs to stay really long, keep the game long as fuck, keep him at distance and try and beat him that way. And then try and out cardio him maybe. But apart from that, Ilya's looking really special. Nowadays is the new generation of MMA. He can sub people, he can wrestle people, he can knock people out. He's defensively sound. I think it's Ilia Topuria's fight to win.
What do you think about Ilia Topuria's drinking wine the night before the weigh time?
So, wine, it doesn't do anything. Alcohol does shit to muscles. Alcohol atrophies muscles. Alcohol stops muscle production, and alcohol makes muscle production slower, and it also, because it's atrophying your muscles, you're weaker, right? However, the fact that he's in a relaxed, calm state, he has peace of mind. Now, that is invaluable, because if you have peace of mind, you're no longer stressed, and if your cortisol goes down, your test is good, and your hormones are good to go. So if your test is good, and your hormones are good to go, and your testosterone is good, and your cortisol is down, then you can focus better. So even though he has a reduction in muscle, MMA is about positioning. MMA is about using weight distribution. It's not about strength. You can be strong, but if you have better weight distribution, then that's good, right? So I think that the alcohol is not an issue for him, because jiu-jitsu is all weight distribution and using people's weight against them. Now, boxing is trying to throw a stone at somebody and not trying to stay tight. The more tension you have, the worse your punching is. So I think that the fact that the alcohol loosens him up and the fact that it reduces his cortisol and he seems pretty calm and collected and focused, and he's focused at all moments, I think that everything works for everyone in different capacities. It's all an individualization process of what you subjectively think is good for you, and that belief in what you think is good for you is getting you half there. If it's objectively not that good for you, then so be it. You know what I mean? So I think that the alcohol is not an issue for Topuria, and I think that the way he's improving and the fact that he's so young, he's the youngest champion in the UFC right now. I think he's 27 or 28, he's the youngest champion. To be the youngest champion and to have Volkanovski and Holloway on your resume already puts you up there with, I think he would be immediately the second best featherweight to ever live. And the next one with Moser would put him at the top spot, best featherweight ever. And he's just started his career, truthfully, at 27. He's got another 5 years to improve. People keep on counting him out. People keep on clowning on him because people think he's a tryhard.
Whoa.
What is it?
I'm just saying, Topuria looks to me like you said, the next generation of a complete mixed martial artist. He's good, good everywhere. Really?
Did you see the Jai Herbert fight? He fought Leon Edwards' camp teammate, who's 6'2". He fought him at lightweight, a division above at 70 kilo, and he wrestled Jai Herbert. He took Jai Herbert down. He took someone who's 6'2 down,
yes.
meaning the second he needed to avert out of the kicking game, he adapted, and immediately he became a really fucking good wrestler. So he has that. He has a deep bag. Another deep bag fighter is Piotr Jan. He's got a bag everywhere. Topuria's bag, we haven't even seen the tools that he has yet. So I think that him beating Volk and also beating Max, I think that puts Max in a situation where he has to go to lightweight. He has to go to lightweight. He's not going to stay at featherweight. Or we run Volk Max 4 for fun. And I think that as you said, to wrap that up, the alcohol with Topuria, I think that with everything that I've said, it's a good thing for him.
Chomping at the bit, Johnny. Let's go.
Another opponent that they're talking about for Pimblett is Dan Hooker. And
that's a fight.
We saw Dan Hooker's last fight, which incredibly entertaining. I don't really think anyone had more fun that night than him.
I picked Dan Hooker. I put him in my bet as well. I'm telling you. Coach, you can't fuck with me. I don't fuck around, man. My accuracy rating on this shit's fucking ridiculous.
And again, he beat Gamra. Split decision. What did you say? Gamrot's a split decision merchant. I love that.
He's a merchant.
A merchant split decision. And so is Dan Hooker's been around for a long time. Is he peaking right now, or is he on the backside of his career?
First of all, Gamrot already brought this up on the show multiple times. Gamrot is a fighter who, because the rule sets don't allow knees to a grounded opponent and 12 to 6 elbows, he's allowed to crotch sniff, and he's allowed all of these positions which he wouldn't be getting. Now, from a striking point of view, Diego Ferreira, who is fucking good. Diego just beat Rebecki, right? The Polish guy. Diego Ferreira is punching him up, right? Benil Dariush is knocking this guy down. If you look at the stats on Gamrot's fights and who's been dropping him, if you look at the stats, fucking RDA head kicks him. Fazeev, that's an injury. Jalen drops him. Armin drops him. Benil drops him. Come on, man. If you're getting dropped that often, I just don't see where Matheus Gamrot is a good fighter. I don't see it at all. All of his wins, there's so many people that have gotten injured in his fight where, you know, if Diego's gotten a rib injury and Fazeev's gotten this knee injury, I just don't see Gamrot as a good fighter. Now, what he's good at is wrestling, right? He's fucking amazing at wrestling, right? And because he's so fucking good at wrestling, Dustin Poirier used that in their training camp, Gamrot and him. And when he went into the Makhachev fight, I thought personally, I'm like, well, he's gonna do very well against Makhachev now because he's gone Gamrot to shoot a million takedowns on him. Look what happened. He was so prepared. Dustin was so prepared for Makhachev's style that Dustin was able to get rid of the takedowns on Makhachev. So Gamrot, when it comes to grappling, is a great fighter. Now, Dan Hooker has been around. I know exactly what you're saying. Dan Hooker, he's been around. Is he surging or is he coming back? Now, he's one of those fighters where you don't even fucking know. You really don't know. Like, I personally think that he's always been good. I think that he's always been good and he's still good now. I mentioned on the show that there's a disconnect between the two generations. There is a young man's generation and there's an old man's generation in the division, right? Because you've got these 34-year-olds with your Justin and you got Charles, you got McGregor, your Dustin and all these guys in the older generation, and you got the younger generation with your Tsayukian, Gamrot, Jalen Turner, and all these guys, whenever they get put up against a hard opponent, they fumble. The younger generation have fumbled every time, right? Fazeev fumbled Gaethje. Gamrot fumbled against Dariush. And Jalen fumbled against Dan. Every time the younger generation gets put up against these guys, lightweight's such a difficult division that the younger guys have been fumbling. Now, I think personally, Dan here has gotten a split decision against Matheus, which is well-deserved. He could have even been unanimous, in my opinion. Jalen Turner, that was a very close fight. He ended up winning that one. Carlos Puelles, he body-kicked him, right? Arnold Allen was at featherweight, so you can't really look too much about that because he was cutting a lot of weight. Now, his only loss at lightweight in recent memory, he beat Nasrat, who's not that good. His only loss is against Makhachev. His only loss is against Makhachev. Now, Chandler and Poirier are lower down in 2020 and 2021, but past 2021, the only person he lost against is Makhachev. He's beaten everybody else. I think Dan Hooker's always been really good, and I think that if you put him up against a lot of these guys, he's going to do well. I would love to see the Dustin Poirier-Dan Hooker rematch, but as I said, you always get a Caucasus fighter, you get a Dagestani or a Chechenian, and they're bound to fucking destroy these guys. It's just a process of elimination of who has the skill acquisition and who understands the game better, and these guys just understand grappling way better. So Dan's been around. I think he was good. I still think he's good, and he's underrated.
Agreed. We have a new champion at welterweight. A person whose name people can't seem to remember, but Bilal Muhammad. I'm very happy for Bilal. You know, when I talk to Americans about this, there is a little bit of like, they don't like, he's Muslim, you know, the Muhammad, you know, but aside from that, you know, I don't judge any of that, but I'm happy for him. It took him so long to get what I feel like he deserves. So I have two questions. One, are you excited about Muhammad as a champion? I mean, he's very dominant in what he does. And two, who the hell does Muhammad fight next?
So I fucking hated Bilal getting the belt. I hated that shit. Right before the fight, I'm at the fucking pub with the boys. And right before the fight, I said to them, I go, I just watched the Bilal Leon first fight before the eye poke and the fucking cornea rip. And I said, Bilal has a really good way of fighting people and fighting to their detriments. He fought Vicente Luque in the rematch, right? A guy that had already KO'd Bilal previously. So he fights Vicente, and Vicente moves left and right. And Bilal, all he does is he doesn't let Vicente throw hooks at him. He just goes 1-2, and he never throws hooks. Never. He just throws 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. So he knows how to beat Vicente. Then he goes and fights Leon the first time, and Leon's throwing these wild hooks, and he's defensively sound. He's moving. He doesn't get hit that much, right? The head kick, he got fucking hurt by that, right? But when it comes to punching, Bilal was looking really good in that first fight with Leon. Very underrated performance. If you rewatch that performance, you'll be like, well, Leon's not really landing too much. He's throwing a lot, not landing much, and Bilal's landing on him. Now, I said right before the fight, I said, dude, I just watched the first fight. If Bilal's gotten better, and Leon, from what we've seen, Leon fought a shittier, you know, Colby, and Bilal's ever improving. Okay, I wouldn't be surprised if Bilal really ruins that distance management where Leon can stay on the outside and throw kicks. If he stays in the middle and kind of just fucking throws punches right at his face and just goes like that constantly. And look what happened. Leon couldn't deal with it because it was short-term range. It was no longer long-term range. So Bilal had a perfect game plan. He beat up Leon, and he also dumped him on his fucking bald patch. Did you see that shit? He high crotched him and he dipped him on his fucking bald patch, right? Bilal, you know, I don't like him, but when it comes to fighting, Bilal has a very high fight IQ, and he knows how to beat each fighter, which makes him really dangerous. Now, where Bilal fails, let's say, is I don't know if he's tough or not. I don't really know if he's a tough fighter. But do you know who is? Fucking Shavkat Rakhmonov. Right. So you're going up against a guy who could get hit with a sledgehammer and survive. And you're going up against Bilal, who's a little bit of a fucking nerd, sorry to say. Right. So if Shavkat fights Bilal, I think that's the fight. I think that's the fight to make where Shavkat can really drown him. Shavkat can grapple with Bilal. If Bilal tries to grapple with Shavkat, he can defend. And then if they get into a brawl where they have to really fight each other, I think Shavkat can really out-tough Bilal. And also that brings me to my other point, because who did Shavkat, answer me this question, who did Shavkat beat in, they had a war together. Do you remember that fight? Who was it? It was Jeff Neal, Hands of Steel, right? Now listen to this, ready? Bilal lost to Jeff Neal in the first round. One of the rounds he scored a 10-8 on Bilal. He dropped him. It's one of the most vicious beatdowns in the UFC. If you watch that fight, Bilal didn't win a single round of that fight. I know I might be reading into paper, scissors, rock here, but Shavkat has all the skills in the world and all the toughness to beat Bilal. I think if Shavkat makes that fight dirty, then he can beat Bilal. And I think if Bilal tries to grapple with Shavkat, Shavkat's got the skills to defend and probably choke him. I think Shavkat's the worst matchup for Bilal right now.
Okay. Does Shavkat deserve a title shot after his last three fights beating Neil Magny, Jeff Neal, and Wonderboy? Is he deserving of a title shot over a Kamaru Usman, over the rematch with Leon Edwards? I know Shavkat's ranked number 4, but is he deserving of a title shot? As long as we saw Bilal have to wait for that, how he had to wait and basically, I don't know, double-digit win streak to finally get his title shot, and here comes Rakhmonov, who, I don't know, I think Jeff Neal is probably his biggest win, being the first to submit Stephen Thompson. I think that's cool, but I think he might be biting off a little bit more than he can chew, and if we're talking about fairness, I'm not sure it's fair that Rakhmonov get that title shot next.
I totally agree with you. You've raised a really good point, because there's a lot of fighters in that division that need a fight Bilal. You know, there's Sean Brady, who just beat Gilbert Burns, and he's surging as well. He doesn't deserve the title shot, but he's right there, and his only loss is Bilal, right? Now you have Ian Garry, who's also coming up. And the reason I think Shavkat, and you've got JDM, who's on a 17-fight win streak, who just KO'd Gilbert as well. I think the reason you give the title shot to Shavkat is primarily because he is a one-in-a-million fighter. Because, and I know that's an interesting thing to say, he's the only fighter ever to have 18 wins, 0 losses, and 18 finishes. We have never seen an athlete like this. If someone's deserving of a title fight and they have 18-0, I say yes, even if they're lower ranked, even if they're 7th or 6th in the world, right? I think that they deserve that title shot. Now when you put that on top, the fact that they have 100% finishes, you're talking about a fighter who has 100% finishes up against Bilal, who's a decision machine. Now the UFC, it's in their best interest to give Shavkat the fight with Bilal. Now, the only issue I have with it, Austin, is that cardio. Bilal's shown time and time again to have really good cardio. We have not seen this with Shavkat because he's a finisher. He is the definition of a fucking finisher. He's 18 fucking finishes, 0 losses. I think that Shavkat, from everything that I've seen, all the footage I watched on Shavkat, him at Killcliffe with Gilbert and Ian, when he talks about taking on Ian, who's undefeated, he's like, ask how those fucking sparring sessions went. That's all Shavkat had to say about that, right? And second, if you look at the footage, Jason Jackson, who's in the PFL, who beat Yaroslav Amosov, the 28-0 fighter in Bellator, Jason Jackson, who's at Killcliffe, you see Shavkat out-wrestling that guy. You see Shavkat out-striking the striker, out-wrestling the wrestler. Shavkat, in my opinion, I think he's a fighter who wants it, truly wants it, and I think he's a savage fucking guy that really wants to hurt the opponent, put them out. And I think that, up against Bilal, who's kind of playing the MMA game, I think Shavkat's looking to finish him. Bilal's looking to fucking drag him out to the later rounds. I think Shavkat gets him before Bilal can protect himself against him.
Okay, so Jack Della Magdalena, another possible title challenger. He has wins over Kevin Holland and Gilbert Burns recently. I think those two wins are better than Shavkat. What do you think about a title eliminator between those two, or does Madalena, is that even a potential opponent for Bilal?
My opinion on that, and I think I've been vocal on this before, is that that fight, when it comes to MMA and the importance of MMA, that fight is so important for MMA as a sport that it has to be five rounds. And I think that if Bilal is taking time off or whatever he was saying, because Shavkat said he wasn't ready to fight him, because the UFC already offered, I believe the UFC already offered Shavkat. I think that if they're going to do that, I think it has to be a five rounder, and I think it needs to be for an interim belt. And you're going, hang on, we already have a champion. The interim belt is so fucking necessary here, because Jack Della is 17 fight win streak and Rukhmanov is 18 fight win streak. We have never seen, people love to talk about undefeated challenger versus undefeated champion. Shavkat and Jack Della, the single best fighters in the world. Like, 17 win streak in a division and 18 win streak in a division. For somebody that is looking at that from an objective standpoint, that is such an absurd stat I think that's worthy of an interim belt. Like I know it's so annoying that the UFC doesn't have a kind of a contender's belt, you know what I mean? Because those guys are so deserving. I think that fight in particular would be the most accomplished two fighters fighting for a non-belt, like, title eliminator. I think that's the most prestigious title eliminator I've ever seen. If anyone can explain to me another fight that would be more important than that, I think that's why the UFC has been reluctant to make it, because you've got two stars where it doesn't make any sense to have that fight for not even a title. You need one of them to go win the title so they can do it. It ruins the whole point of their careers. To be honest, how I would see it, I would want an interim belt on the line. If not, fucking really. Like, Jack fucking hell. Jack's so fucking good. JDM is so good. And I'm not saying that because he's an Australian. He just KO'd Gilbert. Jack's jiu-jitsu, he was doing jits up against Gilbert, like five-time world champion in jiu-jitsu, and he was out jiu-jitsuing him. His boxing is absurd. He lost his first two fights, Austin. He lost his first two fights, and he's gone on a 17-fight win streak. You're talking about two special athletes. You're talking about finishers and two special athletes. These guys are fucking ridiculous. JDM versus Shavkat is a car crash, and I want to see it.
Okay, so do you know who the... So we've got champion Bilal Muhammad. We've got Leon Edwards as the number one contender. And are you familiar? Do you know who the next in line, the next in the rankings is? Or have you completely forgotten about this man? Kamaru Usman.
I was going to say Usman.
Is he even relevant in your eyes as a title challenger? I mean, we haven't seen Usman since a year ago. October of last year, where he lost to a Chimaev. Do you want to see Usman and Muhammad fight?
I think Usman's a better fighter, and I think right now in Usman's career, I think he should stay at middleweight. And I think that is in a position where he can have some really big fights at middleweight, and also that DDP versus Kamaru fight is massive. I think Kamaru, no matter where you put him, he's fighting for a belt, either at welterweight or middleweight. I personally thought he looked really good against Chimaev, crazy good. He ended up getting those round 2 and 3 were very close, and if that went to round 4 and 5, Kamaru was beating Chimaev. Chimaev kind of had a lucky, you know, the fact that it was a 15-minute fight, not a 25-minute fight. Kamaru's a professional. I've been very vocal about how I dislike Kamaru's career as a whole because, you know, he fought Masvidal, and Masvidal's not that important as a challenger. You know, the challengers that were coming up are the ones we have now. Your Ian Garry, your Shavkat, your JDM, Leon, and now Bilal. You know, all those guys are very good, you know. And now we also have Michael Morales, who's, I believe, 17-0, and he's in his mid-20s. He's like 25. Do you even know about him? He's Ecuadorian, 6 foot, Ecuadorian, 6'3", 6'4", bloke, Michael Morales. Go Google him on Tapology. He's in the division too. So all these guys are coming after Kamaru's title reign. I think Kamaru should... I would like to see him fight Bilal Muhammad. I think he's a better fighter than Bilal Muhammad. I think that he needs a fight to get him to the belt, so he needs to fight somebody. I think maybe what you can do... Let me get the division up, and I'll tell you exactly, because a lot of the guys in that division are Killcliff guys, and if they're Killcliff guys, then Kamaru doesn't want to fight them because they're his training partners. Sean Brady's there. That's a really bad matchup for Kamaru, really bad, because he can't grapple with Sean. And Colby Covington's there. They're not going to do that, but he could smash him. JDM is there. He could probably take down JDM and hold him down. I think that's the way to go. I think you do Shavkat versus Bilal, and you do JDM versus Kamaru, because all the rest of the guys would be rematches for Kamaru. And also all the other rest of the guys are Killcliff, and JDM's the only non-Killcliff fighter there.
Let's switch gears for a second. Notice that you have been dabbling in the bare knuckle. What do you think is the biggest difference between fighting bare knuckle, and we're just speaking strictly of punches, the biggest difference between bare knuckle and MMA, the 4 ounce glove versus no gloves? What is the biggest difference that we're seeing a fighter that may be better, good at bare knuckle, but not so good in a fight without the bare knuckles? In fact, the bare knuckles being the thing that makes them good. But what is it? What is it specifically?
I'll give you two reasons. First reason, when you have jiu-jitsu with no gloves on, your grips are better. So in bare knuckle, the reason it's so fucking exciting is that when you get a single collar and you start getting the clinch going with the dirty uppercuts and the dirty boxing, the clinch is much easier, and you can move your opponent, and you can move them by holding their neck with your bare hand. Instead of having a glove to separate you, you can move it. So when you're talking about punching, second reason is that when you punch somebody with an MMA glove, you hit the top of their head and they move their skull down, your hands are protected. In bare knuckle, you have to hit him in the jaw. So it favors a fighter who works the body and works the dirty clinch. So if you go to throw these big wing up overhands and you go to smash them in the head, and you angle your head down, you're going to break people's knuckles in their hands. So it shows, it actually displays who's a more efficient and effective fighter, because you need to have better head movement for bare knuckle than you do for MMA. And similar to, you have worse head movement in boxing, even though that it's taught, because you shield shots off with the gloves, and same with kickboxing. So they're the two things. That's what makes it so exciting, because when you watch the fights and you see how fast they latch up, a single collar or a clinch, it's like Muay Thai without any gloves on. It's so quick, it's so vicious. Imagine pulling someone's head down with your bare hands so you get a better grip on their neck whilst punching up. You've got to You've got an amazing tool there. It's efficient. And second of all, the head movement, it makes it exciting because you need to have better head movement for bare knuckle because you're angling your head a certain way and skimming the punches off. To be honest, I think that bare knuckle fighters against boxers, if they were found on the street and they had to fight each other, the bare knuckle fighter would decimate a professional boxer unless they're Canelo, you know what I mean? But when it comes to the high levels of bare knuckle, like getting a fighter like who came on the show, Franco Trengalia, who's fighting for the bare knuckle BKFC belt against Tony Loco Soto.
Yeah.
If you get someone like Franco, bro, Franco would decimate everybody. You know what I mean? So the reason bare knuckle is so important is that it shows exactly how the grips and how MMA works when you don't have the problem of having the gloves. And that's why I also think that bare knuckle MMA is also important as well.
And I think one of my favorite sports now is the kickboxing in MMA gloves.
Yeah, fuck yeah. The Muay Thai and MMA gloves, that's fucking... Have you seen the pace on them?
Yes. And for me, I believe that what surprises most people just getting into bare knuckle is that the hand speed is different. There's, you know, in boxing, you're going to have 10 to 12 ounces of added weight on your gloves. In MMA, you know, they say they're 4-ounce gloves, but, you know, if you look at an extra small 4-ounce or UFC glove versus a double XL, they're not weighing the same. So, but with a bare fist, I think you would realize that your hand speed is faster, but you don't realize that the hand speed of your opponent is coming much faster. And so that's just the speed of the less weight on the hands. I love to see it. I love to see that. I love to see people get hit with a bare fist for the first time and go, I don't want any more part of that. Because I don't know if you've experienced this. I've never been hit in the face and had it hurt, right? I've never been dropped. I've been buzzed, but I've never been knocked out. But I've never felt pain from a punch. But I can imagine if something breaks on your face, you're going to feel pain. And that could change your whole mindset in the fight. I see people competing with vigor and, you know, get cracked with a bare knuckle and then a whole game changes. So have you experienced pain from being punched in the face? Would you ever consider a bare knuckle fight?
I don't know about that one. That's some scary fucking shit. I'll have to give that one thought. I mean, I'll probably get hit with the 16 ounces and I'll probably get hit flush. The thing that really pisses me off is getting hit in the fucking nose. I hate that fucking shit. Because you get hit in the head, you get hit in the mouth, you know, you're still good. You get hit in the ear, you're still good. The nose, that shit's just annoying because it might not hurt, but the fucking your eyes start watering and then you can't see shit.
But you have to have a nose like this, that bell pepper, you know what I'm saying? That thing goes flat. Your nose, it's not a punch me in the nose, you know? So maybe you might want to get some.
It's long as fuck, isn't it?
Yeah.
I got two fighters for you with the small gloves Muay Thai. So I've trained with both of these guys, both of them, right? River Daz from Melbourne, Australian. He fought Sexan. Sexan has had 200 fights, right? Go look up River Daz versus Sexan. Just type that up quickly. And then the second guy is Furkan Karabag, right? And he's Turkish. And I've trained with both of these guys. I trained with Furkan at MMTA, Epping, which is the Melbourne Muay Thai Academy here. And I trained with River Daz at his gym that he has. Both of those guys, fucking ridiculous. Austin, we need to run the outro.
All right, we're 40 minutes past what I thought.
So
we're gonna do was,
this is gonna require a lot of editing.
And this is all the fun I've had with you, so you know, just keep going more and more. You seem, you know, 45, you're 21, but you seem like an old soul. You know, we have.
That's what I get, man. That's what I get. I always feel like I've been here before. I feel like I've been in here before, and that's why when I looked into that spiritualism shit with the fucking, even the Scientologists talk about it, and the Buddhists talk about it. They talk about that coming back from a previous life and shit. And I don't believe in any of that shit. However, I don't know, something's happened in my life where I've been put in a position where I think about things differently to others. And when I've spoken to my parents, they've basically said that I remind them of previous family members that are not even here. So I think it's just part of my genetics. And because of that, I'm fucking genetically predisposed to something.
You know, who would you say is the number one MMA journalist in the world?
Ariel.
Okay. What the fuck was Ariel doing when he was 20?
And I believe he was like doing a, he was doing a podcast. He was doing a podcast that no one listened to for 3 years.
And was it about MMA?
And boxing and different combat sports.
At 21. So I would put your knowledge of, you're a historian of the game, you're a student of the game, you actively train in all facets of mixed martial arts, you're a real fan, you're a connoisseur of the fight game. And I just want to tell you, I would put your fight IQ, right, if for lack of a better term, up against Ariel Helwani. That's the debate I want to see. And so I just want to let you know, man, don't ever stop doing what you're doing. It's only a matter of time before you are on a stage where you deserve to be, which is in a fight conversation with anybody on the planet, anytime, anywhere. You know, I'm just so impressed by you, man. So thank you for having me. And, you know, I look forward to continuing our friendship over the next however many years. Because I can't wait to watch you. Just like you bet, you make these bets and you're hitting all these bets, I'm betting on you. And I look forward to seeing you achieve your goals, man.
I got a lot of respect for you. Thank you so much for the words. It's always appreciated. And, you know, out of everybody that I have on the show, the reason that I get you on consistently and I talk to you is because I know that you know your shit. And I feel like you're an everyday learner. I'm an everyday learner. I feel like just talking to you, I can learn more about the game. I know about the fighters and stuff, but I feel like knowing the conceptual understanding of MMA as a sport, I think that you understand it and, you know, your striking knowledge and stuff is so important. So I love breaking down the fights with you, and I always appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Is there any final remarks you want to say, Austin Ford, fans at home, as we wrap up the podcast today?
Fighting is for everyone. And we need to all know how to fight. So my suggestion would be all ages, you need to learn to fight. And whether it's on your own at home or you're in a gym, get out there, learn to fight. It's a great fraternity to be part of. And you might as well go to learntofight.online and check that out as well.
Follow Austin Ford on Instagram, link in the description. Look at all of his stuff and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
I'm coming for the kill.